You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another podcast episode. So today, Charles Roberts and I are sitting down and talking with Art Merrick. So Art is actually an electrical engineer by trade, but got into real estate investing about 10 or 11 years ago in 2007. Not only as an investor, but he's also a real estate agent now. But he brings a very methodical approach to the way he's invested. So we thought we'd bring him on here and just talk about how he's built up his rental portfolio. So Art, welcome. Thanks for sitting down with us.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
So how'd you get into real estate investing?
Well, I started back in 2007 when I bought my first condo. But to be honest with you, it all really started with the downturn. So I bought my condo, which is a whole story in and of itself, right before the downturn.
As your primary residence.
Correct.
Okay.
And started doing the house hacking thing right away. In fact, I had a renter before I even closed on that property. And I had the house hacking. They call it house hacking now. You know, I mean, I don't know what they called it back then. It's kind of a new term. But I really decided to get into investing in about 2008, 2009. I had a phone call with my parents. I was kind of conservatively raised financially. Both my parents worked 9 to 5. My dad's a mathematician, kind of an engineer type. And they reported to me that they had lost almost their entire life savings in the stock market, putting all their money in the 401k. They did everything right, saved their money, sent their two kids to college. And it just crushed me. It absolutely crushed me to hear that my parents, who I love to death, had lost all their savings. And I said, you got to do something about this. You can't just plan your retirement on your 401k.
So I got a few questions to ask you. So when you say they lost their savings, you mean they actually lose it, or is it just they rode down the market like everyone else did in 2000?
They rode down the market like everyone else did.
Okay. They didn't get sucked up in like Bernie Madoff's pyramid scheme or anything. Okay.
And they have made it back in the last, 10 years. They have made their money back. But it broke my heart to hear that their retirement may be entirely gone. And they were looking to retire in the next 5 years at that point. So I said, you got to do something about this. You got to look at investing your money elsewhere. I was already house hacking my little 2-bedroom condo and decided then that I was going to continue house hacking. And in, I think, the best way possible that you can house hack. And if you're young enough and got a little money in the bank, the best thing you can do is go out there and buy a primary residence and rent a room, or rent 2 bedrooms, or buy a duplex and rent the other side. I mean, from a financial perspective, it is absolutely the best, easiest thing you can do.
This is very interesting to me, because you're already house hacking, so you had some type of inclination to do investing, or at least try to live for cheaper. I'm not sure what it was.
Just wanted to live cheaper.
Okay, so that was it, because it's interesting that you say you're house hacking, and then a year or two later, you had that realization due to your parents, 401k dropping, like, holy smokes, I got to start investing. And you weren't really considering your condo, running out their bedroom, as investing. You were just like, hey, I'm living for cheaper.
Well, don't get me wrong. I had wanted to buy a house my whole life. I was at an opportunity in my life where I had a good career for the first time in my life, was making good money, and I needed to stop renting. I needed to invest my money in real estate. I always knew that real estate was a good investment, whether it's just your primary investment and or now as rental properties, buy and holds, and so forth. I always knew that. It was kind of, it's kind of the American dream. I guess I'm a cliche, it's the American dream.
And I just want to paint this picture of when you bought your first house hack, because we work with a lot of house hackers, because like you said, man, it's just the best thing you can do if your lifestyle allows and everything else, just number speaking. I mean, what type of analysis did you do when you bought your 2-bedroom condo? Were you looking at cap rates and cash flow, or what metric were you using?
I knew Jack. I did not know a thing about investing. I looked all over the internet about investing. I did for years, found nothing. So to hear people say that they Google Denver investing now and this website, Denver Investment Real Estate, comes up is just hugely eye-opening to me. And that's why we're here. We want to help people. I just wish those resources were out there to help people 10 years ago. So I knew absolutely nothing. I was not running any numbers, to be honest with you. And I knew that by renting a bedroom, my mortgage would be, at the time, $400 or $500 less, and that my tenant would be helping me pay down my mortgage, and that I would be gaining equity. And I mean, in any investment, you're gaining equity in three different ways. If the market's going to annually increase at roughly 6% every year, you're going to gain equity that way. You're going to gain equity by your tenants paying down your mortgage and gaining equity as your mortgage gets paid down. And then if you're smart and your property cash flows, you got extra money every month and you're gaining equity that way. So at the time, I didn't really know that. I just wanted to be smart about it.
So we work with a lot of house hackers, and we have, I'll say, the full spectrum of people just say gung-ho. They don't buy a property because they know in 30 years they'll be happy they did. And they get other people out there where they start analyzing the properties and they're like, oh, well, you know, I can buy this property for, you know, 3.5% or 5% down. If I move out in a year or two, it may like negative cash flow $50 or $100, $200 a month. I mean, what's your take? Been there as a house hacker, now a successful investor, like, how would you talk to people like that? Now, hey, they're young, they're house hacking. How much analysis you put into, hey, when you move out versus how long you hold on to? What advice could you give those people wanting to do what you've done?
Well, to be honest with you, although I'm a bit methodical, I'm more organized, I think, than methodical. And even though I didn't do analysis back then, I certainly do now. But I'm just very simply looking at cap rates and conservatively. I use rentometer.com to look at potential rents. I'll use a conservative number of the range that I find on Rentometer, and I'll do that. But to be honest with you, actually, I think Charles said it best. He said, it was in one of your other podcasts, stop trying to analyze the market. It's time in the market. And this, for me, was a 30-year plan. Right? The typical mortgage you get, the typical conventional mortgage you get is 30 years, say. In 30 years, at this very point in my life, in 30 years, I am going to have 6 properties, 9 units paid off in full, and I'm going to be making a lot of money. And right now, it's a good income as cash flow. But to those people who are like, I want to make money in the next 5 years and have a 5-year or less exit strategy, I don't know what to tell them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's a good answer. So let's go loop back around. So you bought your house back in 2007.
Yep.
And then in 2008, you had that realization saying, oh my gosh, I need to plan for the future. How did you go from that house hack to having 9 units now? What's the story?
Well, at that point, I figured I needed to kind of come up with a plan. And I'll be honest, I follow this KISS principle, right? In engineering, you hear in the rooms all the time, keep it simple, stupid, right? And I now have a spreadsheet that I started developing then, and the spreadsheet is like living water, right? It's I'm always working on it and have been for 10 years, but I didn't have a whole lot of analysis to look at then. I didn't know anything about cap rates or GRM or anything like that. I just wanted to know that I wanted the cash flow. And actually, when I bought my first house after I moved out of the 2-bedroom condo, I wasn't cash flowing at all. It was dead recession, horrible time. I was still probably paying $300 or $400 a month out of pocket on top of the rent for my HOA dues and my mortgage on the condo. But I rented out at least one or two of the bedrooms in the new house that I bought. And it's really after that, when I bought my third house, that everything started to come together, that I really started to cash flow. The market started to rebound. And really, that's why the market started to rebound. Rents continued to increase and mortgage rates went down. And so I kept doing the house hacking thing. You can put so little down. And I'm a big fan of taking as little money as possible, or even if you have 300 grand, don't go out and buy a house a $300,000 house, great, you own it outright. But if you spread that out and buy five homes, your net worth is going to be through the roof. At least in 15 to 30 years, it will be.
Yep. So how many times, so condo house hacked, house number two, you house hacked. And so if condo was top the market, so you probably, you know, back then you bought before the bubble burst, right?
The condo was before the bubble
burst.
Okay,
so you paid a lot for it.
Yep.
And then house number two, where was that in the current market? Was it the market still going down? Was it at the bottom?
It was 2010, so it was kind of at the bottom.
Okay.
So it was a good time to buy. So I got a four-bedroom, two-bath house for about 160, 165.
What'd you put down on that?
So, again, as little money as possible. I didn't take advantage of an FHA loan on my first home. I took an advantage of FHA loan on this one. I put 3.5% down.
So second house in 2010, third house you house hacked, when did you buy that?
2012.
Okay, so about 2 years later.
Uh-huh.
And what was the, what did you pay for? What did you put down?
I like telling people this because it's funny, because the market was going back up. It was starting to go back up. This was a five-bedroom, much larger five-bedroom, three-bath house. Complete remodel. It was a brand new home. Not such a great area, but it was $300,000, which right now sounds amazing, especially in West Colfax, which is blowing up now. And at the time, I was so hesitant. I'm a single man. I got two houses already. I got a full-time job. I'm property managing everything. I'm doing all the fixing. I'm doing all the maintenance, finding all the tenants. $300,000, that sounded like a monstrous amount of money for a single man with a single income. And, you know, I thought, well, my income will go up over the years, you know, even if it's only the 3% merit increase.
Because you're still an engineer at this time, right?
Yep. Working in healthcare IT, actually, but yeah. And I knew that rents would go up and I would continue to make more money as my interest rates stayed the same. I did end up refining the other house and getting a better interest rate on that, which is really smart to do. If the interest rates are low, you can do so.
Did you just refinance or did you do like a cash out refinance?
I did do a cash out refinance, which helped me buy another property.
Right. And by the way, you sound like every investor.
Time, whenever we buy something, we go, oh my God, am I making the wrong decision? It's so expensive and this and that. But that's exactly where I was 20 years ago. And
I hear this all the time from, you know, old aged investors like us. You know, it's like, yeah, at the time, it just seemed like so much and I was taking a risk. And the truth is, you were taking a risk. You didn't know what the future would hold. And then thankfully, all of us 10 years later laugh at ourselves and have these types of discussions.
Lucky for me, I was laughing at myself about 3.5, 4 years later.
Yeah, because you hit, I mean, God, you bought in 2012. Are you kidding me?
Yep, bought it for $300,000 and it was a lottery ticket. I ended up selling it for $600,000. So in 4 years or just under 4 years, which was amazing. And that doesn't happen everywhere, but back in those days, you know, when I was first starting to get into this, there wasn't a whole lot of investment resources out there to use. What I started doing is just kind of running some numbers to see how I could cash flow. And I wanted to cash flow at least, say, $400 to $800 a month.
This was house number three.
This was house number three.
Okay.
So at that point, I wanted to be able to cash flow $400 to $800 a month.
So this is 2012. You have house number three.
Yep.
What did you do for house number four? Is that another house hack?
Well, house number four is technically mine and my wife's house, which is in a great area and in and of itself is doing great for us. So my wife and I got married at that time and I'm so lucky to have her. She supports me in all of this. She gives me a lot of autonomy to kind of run this business. And she helped me purchase our fourth investment home. And at that time, I was still didn't have a whole lot of metrics to use, although I was using this spreadsheet I was developing just to see how things would cash flow. I did a little research, and one of the things I was really focusing on that time is I really believed in Denver's expanding light rail system. The two houses, the one I bought for $300,000, sold for $600,000, was right by a light rail. The one bought it there before the light rail opened. The one I'm still holding on to, the second house I bought, was right by a light rail. The fourth one is right by a light rail. And that light rail, the R line, actually just opened up last year or earlier this year even, I think.
So why do you like the light rail?
I was doing some research on the internet and, you know, because I wanted to buy in areas that I thought would have potential. I, as a single man, would often buy homes in slightly more distressed areas. The second and third house were in slightly more distressed areas. Doesn't work out that well, the house hacking thing, when you get married, unfortunately. So houses, you know, 4, 5, and 6 were pure investment properties, which require 25% down, right? So again, another reason why the personal property, the house hacking thing, is so advantageous.
Just a quick thing. So you can actually do 15% down and 20% down. Actually, you don't have to put 25% down if you're reasonably qualified.
There you go. That's wonderful. And I will do that if I can find a lender that can do that.
Yeah, Joe Massican at Castle & Cook.
So I think it's been great for us putting 25% down, though.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
Gives us a little more equity in the homes. And I'm happy doing that. I did have an opportunity at one point to put 20% down and still.
So I just kind of want to keep this timeline because it's so interesting and you know the numbers so well. So house hack number 3, and then you bought house number 4 as a house hack with your wife at the time.
Well,
right?
It's not a house hack. It's just
your primary residence. Okay, so you moved into there. That's property number 4, which is your primary.
Yep. And then so technically house number 5 was my wife and I's first investment purchase. And it's right by a light rail that the R line, which I knew was going in, right by the Anschutz Fitzsimmons Medical Campus.
Okay.
Colfax and I-225. That whole area is blown up.
And when did you buy that?
That was 2015. I've been watching the market on that a little bit. It's not been going up like West Denver has. It's been going up a little slower, but it's a great rental and it's a great area. And again, my plight here is to buy and hold for at least 10 years. So I'm not looking to get massive, you know, 8, 10%, 15% gains, 100, 200% gains, much less in 3 to 5 years. You know, it's 10 years or more is the plan. If it gets better than that, great. You know, I'll sell the house, take that money, invest it in 3 other properties, which is how properties 6 and 7 and 8. Wow, it sounds like we're way higher than I thought. So technically that was 5. Okay. I did end up selling the condo in 2013.
So what did you sell, the condo or that house number 3 first?
I sold the condo first.
Okay.
I was cash flowing on it, but it was not cash flowing great. I mean, by the time I was in house 3, I was, you know, cap rates. Now, at this point in time, I may know cap rates, but even if I didn't, I mean, I was making $800 to $1,000 a month on that, on the second home, where I'm only making $100 or $200 a month on the condo. And then I move in with my wife and we buy this other house, number 5, and I'm making $800 a month on that. So for me to have the stress of dealing with tenants there, just the numbers didn't work out for me. Having a house at just, you know, $100, $200 a month cash flowing.
And then you were talking about now houses, I guess, 6, 7, and 8, where you bought, it sounds like the same time. Was that from the proceeds of that other house you sold?
Yes.
You had like $200,000 or $300,000 in gains?
Yep. Like I said, I stretched it out. And I bought 2 duplexes and a triplex.
Oh, wow. What parts of town?
So at this point, like I said, I'm trying to stretch out money. I wanted to buy at least 2 or more homes. And I wanted to start getting into the multiplexes, residential multiplexes, so 4-unit or less. And in order to do so, I really kind of had to go outside towards the outskirts of the Denver metro area to find affordable 2, 3, 4-unit properties. So the triplex is in Englewood, but great area of Englewood, right about Hamden and Broadway. The one's in Brighton and one's in Commerce City.
Okay.
And, you know, I ran the numbers on them, on all of them. And at this point, I'm definitely working cap rate and GRM into my spreadsheet. And like I said, I try to be very conservative when I'm running the numbers before I purchase. That way, when I go and rent it or turn over the renters, I'm usually happily surprised. Anything over a 7% cap, I'll definitely go look at it, especially now. But probably the best deal I ever did was the home in Inglewood, which I did put about $5,000 into doing a little remodeling of it, estimated about a 7 cap conservatively, and turned it into a 10 cap. So, and you can't get 10 caps in Denver. I mean, yeah. not at all.
Those are hard to find in the state of Colorado. Yeah. I mean, so in one of our pre-show notes, you said you gained a lot of success in real estate investing over the years by managing all of your own properties, maximizing market rents and cash flow, and doing about 90% of maintenance, upgrading, and fixing yourself. So what tips can you give people out there who want to do what you're doing, self-manage to, you know, save money and hustle and work? Like, how have you been able to do that successfully?
It's funny. I met someone the other day and she said to me, "Oh, you work at your castle?" She said, I wanted to go work there, but I went there and they started asking me all these questions and they wanted me to do all the work. And I thought,
how dare they?
Yeah. Really? Well, honestly, I mean, I like to help investors who are getting into this for the first time. But you know what? You got to have the impetus and the drive to put in some hard work. You really do. I mean, if you don't want to manage your own properties, you got to put in a lot of time making phone calls, interviewing property managers. I got a list of 90 plus questions you should ask property managers.
You said 90?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So welcome to the world of engineering.
So you just have to do your homework. And you have to run some numbers. You know, one of the things I learned coming to your castle is, you know, Charles is a very successful investor himself. He uses spreadsheets too, just like I do. My spreadsheet's different than his. And what works for me is different than Charles, but it works for both of us. You know, what works for me works for me. What works for Charles, you know? And those people that are out there that really want to do this and make this work will make it work because they want to. And we're here to help you along the way.
So what's your worst story as a managing your own properties?
Well, I literally just had to evict a tenant. And actually, I'm a nice guy. You know, I mean, like, landlords are the bad guys. Charles, I've heard you say that. It doesn't matter what you do or how nice you are. We're always the bad guy. But, you know, I'm a person with feelings. I care about my tenants. And, you know, I had to evict her. I mean, she was trashing the place. I said, you know, although you paid late rent late, I'll let you stay through the end of the month. Because if I evict you, you got to be out in 3 days. I hope you appreciate that. So at this point, I'm still dealing with that. And it's been such a headache, but it cost me about $5,000 to get that place up and running. In Denver now, especially with all the new builds, you see these dumpsters, the roll-offs sitting outside all the time. And I had to fill one of those full with all the shit she left in the house.
The 30-yard dumpsters?
Yeah, full.
So it wasn't like it was just trash and her purse belongings she left and just...
Yeah, the toilets were ripped off the floor.
Oh, my God.
How does that happen?
Drugs. I mean, basically, like, you can't do that sober or non-drugs, I think.
Yeah, so that $5,000 doesn't include my time either. I put in 90 hours last week, but I'll be honest, I've started tracking my time. And, you know, a 90-hour work week for me is rare. I probably average more like, honestly, 5 to 10 hours a week managing my properties. So if this is what you want to get into and you have the patience, you can get to a point where you're literally working maybe 5 or 10 hours a week. You know, you might have some busy weeks.
But then you get the horrible week.
Yep.
And you were in there, I mean, taking the trash out yourself, like remodeling. You sound like you're hands-on, right?
I'm very hands-on, you know, I manage the whole process. You know, I fixed the toilets myself. I fixed a lot of things myself. I mean, I was there for 90 hours. I did a lot of work.
So it's $5,000 plus 90 hours of your
yes.
time?
Yes.
90 hours. Yeah, that's a significant amount of time.
Yes.
And this was like 2 weeks ago, right?
This was like 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, but you're smiling right now. Why are you smiling?
It's all in the past, you know? I mean, your landlord, you got to expect this is going to happen every once in a while.
So you made a huge amount of money and you know that every once in a while, you're going to have a bad week.
What are some other bad weeks or bad stories?
Actually, I do think this is a great tip from Eric Ross. He's a property manager. I think a good property manager. I don't know very many property managers since I don't use with them, but he asked me at a round table at Lon Welsh's house one night. He said, why do you only approve tenants that have a 650 or better credit score and more than 3 times the monthly rent? And, you know, I said, well, I want to know that they're going to pay the rent. And he said, well, I want to challenge you on that. You know, nobody has great credit these days, and the people that need to rent and will stay a long time are the ones who can't go and buy. So my mistake was taking that a little too far. I found a tenant who didn't really have some good verifiable income. She made about $10,000 in 1 month cleaning houses, quote unquote. And it's actually law now in Colorado that you can't judge a tenant by where they get their income from, right? So as long as I had verifiable income, it was great. She seemed like a really nice gal. So I let her in, and that ended up being a complete mess.
And by the way, I think that's City and County of Denver. That's not Colorado. Yeah, that was city council saying, I need to run for mayor, therefore I'm going to come up with this great idea, which is not a great idea for the very people she's trying to protect. But it was City and County of Denver.
Well, like, what happened with that? Did she just trash a place or not pay? Did she have to go through the eviction process?
I needed to evict her. She ended up moving out and moving other people in. And the people she ended up moving in were even less reliable than her in terms of paying rent on time and always paid rent in cash, but I had to track them down month after month, you know, sometimes 2-3 weeks late on the rent payment.
So you were allowing that? Like that? I'm surprised to hear you say that you allowed that even, because obviously it was an illegal sublease. Not illegal, against your lease, but you were okay with it because you were kind of getting the money?
To an extent here, especially when you're managing properties yourself, you have to kind of weigh the good with the bad, right? Because if I'm still getting money and they're taking care of the house, okay, because I could evict them, and evict them could be a $5,000 process.
I totally get it. I've been in that position before, and you have to, like, the books will all say never do that, and the attorneys will say it for lots of good reasons, but I've literally been in your position, and, you know, as long as I'm getting the rent and the roof is still on, I'm generally okay with it.
Right. And this was a situation that I just couldn't justify any longer. And by the way, this took place over only like a 2.5-3 month period of time. And these new guys that were in the house had guns all over the house. They had unauthorized pets. They were smoking cigarettes and whatever else in the house. And it was a mess. So luckily I was able to nicely talk them into just getting out. And, you know, they said, we can't afford it anymore. I said, great. I can't afford you anymore.
Wow. I'll tell you, that's kind of rare. Like, you dodged a freaking bullet on that one.
Yeah, and I'll try every time to dodge that bullet if I can.
Right, because if you think about it, they could just stay there. They're not on the lease, you know? It would take you 30, 45 days, whatever, to evict them. They stop paying the lease. I mean, my God, you got lucky on that one.
Yeah, I think so. So I got a great tenant in there now. I was able to raise the rent a little bit. And the learning process there for me was just, you're much better off with no tenant at all than you are with a bad tenant. I mean, trying to rush a tenant in because you don't have enough interested prospective tenants, maybe your price is too high, maybe, yeah, you know, whatever.
So let me give you a little perspective though, because I hear what you're saying, but that's only because you've been a landlord only since 2007. You didn't see 2003 when we hit 13.4% vacancy. So from your perspective, I understand that. But I will tell you that from my perspective, who's done this since 1998, when you have 13% vacancy, if you want to continue to own your property, you just start taking the dregs of society. I mean, that's what I have found, because it's that or you have it vacant for 3 or 4 months. So it's such a fine line on what to do, but the market ultimately drives it. And I'm just telling you in a friendly way and telling our listeners, talk to someone who went through the downturn in the early 2000s when you really did not have control anymore. And to try to be picky with your tenants was very difficult. Very, very difficult. And someday you'll see that again, and someday I'll see that again.
Well, I'm not looking forward to
it. No, you shouldn't. But you know what? you've made, like, you know, I'm holding my hands out wide. You've made this much money and you'll survive it. But you're going to see it sooner or later when the tenants truly have the upper hand on you, and they know it and you know it and they know you know it. It gets a little harder, but we're years away from that. But someday it'll happen.
Yeah. And when it does, you know, we'll have to take the corrective actions to that fine line. And where that line is, it's different for everybody, I assume. Just like your investment strategy is a little different than mine. I know you allow Section 8, and I don't like Section 8.
Got it. Totally.
But I like to maximize rents, and that's hard to do with a Section 8 tenant.
Right. No matter what you do to the property, you're probably going to get roughly the same rent. Whereas in the market, if you add nicer amenities, you'll get a little more rent and you can, you know, pay that off.
Right. Absolutely.
So let's talk about today's market. I mean, what was the last property you bought?
The last property I bought was, I bought two back to back. The last one was in Commerce City in January of this year.
Okay. So quite recently. And by the way, the last property I bought was in Lakewood in January of 2018. Okay. So people who are listening are, you know, like, hey, that's great. The old guys, you know, they bought 10, 20 years ago. What do I do today? How do you feel about that? And how would you advise me if I was a newbie, a smart person, an engineer, you know, I'm 34 years old, want to buy in for a first investment. Do you buy in a market like this? I mean, how do you advise someone? Should they stay away from it or not?
That's a great question. And to be honest with you, it goes right back to, you know, stop timing the market. You know, it's time in the market. So with that being said, don't wait. If I could tell anybody to do anything that I learned from, you know, the 11 plus years in my investment career, is I wish I could have started sooner.
Yeah.
And I started right before the, you know, the downturn, and I held on to it and I sold that place and I still made 60 grand. They call Denver future proof. I, you know, that's a whole nother.
Yeah, I don't take that seriously, but hey, it's nice to hear. You know, I sleep 5 more minutes a night because someone says that.
Sure. But if you buy a property now, even though this market is crazy right now, I can guarantee that in 10 years from now, you're going to be a happy person.
I just couldn't agree more. I mean, that's practically words out of my own mouth. So we have a little audience here in our booth, and one of the ladies was just in my class, and she'll have heard me just say the words dollar cost averaging. You know, can you time the stock market? No. Can you time the real estate market? No, I can't, and you can't either. But why not, you know, maybe put $100 in the S&P every month? Time the market, just put it in there. Why not buy perhaps a property once every 2 years? Just don't time the market because you can't control what you can control. So that's my version of saying exactly what you said. And by the way, if you have any sort of timeline in less than 7 to 10 years, I actually don't think you should buy a property because who knows what's going to happen? There could be a crash in 2 years and 2 months, or it might be another 12 years. And I simply don't know which it is. So time the market's a fool's game. Everything you just said, I'm nodding my head violently.
Yeah, I have a friend who is a very wise individual, but like you, Charles, he watches the market like a hawk, and you're a data guy. You love the data. I don't. Honestly, I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to buy it now, and I'm going to sit on it for 10 plus years, and I'm going to let the market do what the market's going to do. I have no control over it, so there's no use in me agonizing over it, honestly. So I'm not a data guy. My friend is a data guy, and he's just loves arguing with me about how the market's going and how if he buys a house, he's going to lose all his money if he does it right now because we're going to go into this huge recession. And I just made a bet with him. It's a $100 bet, so it's not the end of the world. And to be honest with you, I don't care if I lose. We bet $100 that the market is going to increase. Doesn't matter how much percentage that home prices will increase next February, March over February, March of 2018. And I feel good about the bet, to be honest with you, but I don't care if I lose. And the reason is that he's missing the point. I keep trying to tell him to buy a house and don't wait. And he wants to buy a house when the market drops and then make so much money off of it. And I'm like,
yeah. So let me ask you this. How many units do you own right now?
Of the 6 homes we own, we have 9 units.
And how many units does he own right now?
0.
And I'm just going to take a guess here that your personal wealth is like infinitely freaking higher than his.
Yeah.
So just, you know, let him squander away his life. I mean, he's a friend, right? And I have friends like that too. But Chris and I, you know, as agents, and maybe you as an agent as well, those are the type of people we vet out of our lives very quickly. They're not bad people, but they're terrible investors and they shouldn't invest, and they will not probably build a lot of wealth. And you're just the epitome. You're the archetype of every successful long-term investor I've ever known. Everything you're saying is what guys like me and others say.
I read something really poignant to this point about, I forget where it came from, but it was an article on how to build wealth, and kind of where I am holding my very vague strategy. But I really want to get to 20 homes. I may amend that to 20 units because that will be a lot easier than 20 homes.
Why 20?
Well, this particular person, I think, kind of just picked that number.
I have 16. Why 16? I don't know. I had 29 at one time.
Well, I thought you said your goal was to get to 20.
Yeah, his goal.
Right. And that just came from this article that I read where this particular person said, buy 20 homes. When you get to 20, sell the first and pay off number 20 and keep working. He said, that's the way to build wealth. And that's a very simple way of saying buy now, hold for a long time, keep buying, and eventually you'll have enough equity where you can start paying off those homes and building some real net worth.
So the question I always like to ask investors, Art, is you've been investing now for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you could go back with the knowledge that you have now, hop in your time machine, go back and talk to yourself 11 years ago, what advice would you give your younger, not as wise self?
Yeah, I said it before. I would say, do it now. And whatever's comfortable for you, if getting into a duplex and renting out one side is better for you, then that's great. If you want a single family home, which is kind of the route I went and house hacked that way, but do it now. And if you can, house hack. Because you may end up at a point in your life where I'm now, where I'm married. My wife doesn't want to move us and our family, and neither do I. And now I have to start putting 25% down. Like, people like us, we didn't start off as wealthy people with all this capital to invest in real estate. And 90%, if not more, of our listeners are those people too. If you can put down as little money down as possible buying a primary residence and then just start house hacking, and do it now.
I think that is great advice, and I agree. And I mean, Art, this has been fantastic. So I appreciate you coming out here, sharing what you've done. And how can people reach you if they want to pick your brains or go out and work with you to find property? How can people get a hold of you?
Absolutely. Well, my email address is artmarek@yourcastle.org. It's ArtMarek. Or they can call me on my cell phone, which is straight from Wisconsin, still Midwest represent, 414-405-1146. And I'm happy to talk to anybody and help along the way, just like I know you guys are.
Yeah, and I will, for those out there listening, I will put his email and phone number in the show notes so you guys can just look those up while you're driving. Art, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Charles, appreciate it.